All right, happy Friday. This is why we lift all them weights throughout the week, Don. This is now we get to have a fun practice here. We get to do a little inter-squad scrimmage. We don't have to run laps. Good Friday to you on the PM team. Malzy, obviously, solo again. That's why we are just giving Pony a very hard time right off the jump here. That was James Palmer of Bleacher Report doing his YouTube show, his NFL update show, talking about TJ Watt and about what he's hearing about how this contractual situation is going to play out, this extension talk that Watt is in with the Steelers right now. And Palmer mentions in there, Watt has every right to ask for every bit of what he's asking for. He has every right to get even more than Myles Garrett. And with a nod to Tim Benz, who we all know, who does his Breakfast with Benz column in the Trib, the Steelers also have every right to tell TJ Watt, guess what, buddy? You're playing this year on the old franchise tag. Have fun. Or playing this year, excuse me, on the last year of your deal. And then if you really want more money, how about that franchise tag, my friend? I start there today just because that's an update from somebody who's plugged in. He's probably talking to people at least on one side of this. When you hear a thing like that, Don, I don't know about you, but I always think of that's the agent telling him something like that. Because sure as hell ain't the team going, oh, we're hearing that TJ Watt's going to get more than $40 million. We're hearing he's going to get more than Myles Garrett. You can be pretty certain that it's coming from the TJ Watt camp if James Palmer's hearing it and portraying it like that. And I start today, I want to make it very, very clear. It's a summer Friday. It's going to be one of those classic summer days. It's hot. It's humid. It might storm. It might not storm, depending on where you are. You might drive through a wall of water at some point, like I did last night on the way to the Next Up on the Fan auditions. More on those later in the show. Or you might have a nice sunny day out on the golf course at the pool, whatever. We are taking a very relaxed Friday tone here. I am not going to be sitting here just spewing barrel fire for 3 hours and 40 minutes. I'm not. We're going to talk some sports. We're going to have fun. We're going to possibly bag on poor city limits again. And maybe Jason Mackey will get caught in the crossfire here as well. Have a good old time. But I thought this was relevant just because it's another excuse to make the point that I think cannot be made enough in terms of the TJ Watt extension negotiations. Since when did it become a good idea to keep up with the Joneses if the Joneses are the Cleveland Browns? Isn't the whole keeping up with the Joneses bit about, hey, this family that has a lot of money and they do a lot of nice things and they like to get all the best stuff, this family that's the gold standard, we try to match them to our folly. Usually keeping up with the Joneses is a bad thing, right? Live beyond your means. You know how that goes. In this case, it's, well, the Cleveland Browns did it for Myles Garrett. I guess the Steelers should do it for TJ Watt, and he's got every right to ask for it. Yeah, if I'm making decisions based on what the Cleveland Browns do as like my rubric for how I proceed with an elite player at a certain position, I've probably lost the plot already. Remember, this is the franchise that actually did, it appeared, have their quarterback savior at long last. They screwed that up. Probably in more spectacular fashion when you consider who they replaced him with than any team has in NFL history. And Lord knows in recent NFL history, we certainly know about quarterback screw-ups around these parts. So just because they're giving the guy who came out in the same draft that TJ Watt came out in and has put up similar numbers to TJ Watt throughout their entire respective careers, just because they gave that guy $160 million guaranteed an extension, the Steelers should just traipse right along and follow suit? For what? Why? This just seems like another example of, at some point, you've got to prioritize good business. And good business is not giving TJ Watt everything he wants, is not giving TJ Watt more than Myles Garrett, is not stroking TJ Watt's ego because of how much he's meant to the franchise in the past or how much he's meant to the defense and how you have a desire to be a one-helmet guy. At some point, good business is sitting down with TJ Watt and having a hard conversation that sounds something like this. Hey, man, you've been dinged up a little bit at times. You're coming off of your least productive season where you actually played a full slate of games. You don't always play at the very end of games at those high-pressure times. in the game. You sometimes tap yourself out. It's kind of a weird habit that people just have normalized or have glossed over. You are also not necessarily somebody that is going to age ultra gracefully. He gets beaten singled up matchups more often than he used to. Not often still, but more often than he used to. You're on the back nine of your career. We're going to pay you a very competitive wage, but we're not going to reset the market for you because you're not a market reset player anymore at this point in your career. You're very near the top of the market. You're not the guy leading the charge. You can make an argument that Myles Garrett isn't either. You can make an argument that you could put probably the top 5 to 7 edge rushers in the league in some sort of a blender, and you'd come out with a great player at any one of them. So it's kind of a muddled top of the heap here. And paying TJ Watt like you're playing the old quarterback derby where every how many weeks it was in some off seasons, a new guy would, for that headline cycle, become the highest paid player in the league, the highest paid quarterback ever. Like, doing that with edge rushers who are in their early 30s now, not my idea of good business. Modeling yourselves after the Cleveland Browns, I might consider a different tack. And so I hear that from James Palmer, and if you listen to how he delivered that opinion, it certainly seems like it's coming from the player side. It most definitely seems like it's not coming from the team side. It just makes me leery if it's true. If TJ Watt's people are the ones telling James Palmer this, or I guess if he's talking to people who are even more plugged in than he is around the league, and he really thinks that based on what he's hearing, it's credible that he's going to get more than Garrett, that's a mistake by the Steelers. That's a whiff. At some point, you have to be the team that puts... Also, like, I should clarify here, it still doesn't make it good business, what I'm about to say, but it would make it more palatable if TJ Watt had been part of multiple playoff wins, deep playoff runs. If you could track back to a playoff game or games where TJ Watt had 3 or 4 sacks or something like that, had some absurd forced fumble late in a game that turned a game, maybe scored a defensive touchdown in a winning effort. If there were Pantheon playoff performances that ended in team wins for TJ Watt, it wouldn't change what he is or is not as a player right now, and it wouldn't change what he's actually asking for. All that stuff would be the same, technically, if he's still coming off his worst full season as a pro, or since his first season, I guess, if you want to go back that far. But you could make the argument much easier to yourself that, hey, there is a sentimentality factor in here that actually has some substance. All right, well, apparently it's going to be an EAS Friday here on the show. You know what, now, Donnie, I should go back and renegotiate my contract. I should renegotiate it as a television and radio personality, or a video and radio personality, because we've got our guy, like, SportsVids412, who I think has a nice, you know what, there's some nice traditions that are getting started with our YouTube commentariat. Every time the show's about to start at about between 156 and 159, I fire up the YouTube comments because I like to look at them, and occasionally there's some good stuff in there for the show. And I just see a guy write, Malzy! And so he was the first person, he's the one who says that, and he was the first person to go, dead air, what's happening? Malzy, blink twice if the overlords are speaking. So now I got to hold up homemade EAS alert signs and tell people that, yes, in fact, we are being knocked off the air, and if you're watching on YouTube, it looks like dead air.
That's a good move on your part, a veteran move, some would say.
You can watch the show on YouTube as a reminder. Like, if for some reason you work in an office and you don't want to use the Odyssey app, although you could easily do that, you could pop those headphones into your computer, and man, what a great thing you could do. Pretend like you're being productive, and instead you're just looking at me and telling me to put my hat back on because my bald head is making a glare off of our studio lights. Anyway, as I was saying, we had a good YouTube comment as well that just said, hey, if you try to become the Cleveland Browns, or if you try to keep up with the Cleveland Browns, you end up potentially being the Cleveland Browns. And that was the other thing I've thought about with this Watt deal from the time it started. Remember, Donnie, remember the point I've made really quickly, and you can jump on in here. Hello, Donnie Football on a Friday. Our guy Jack, the intern, is back there as well, who looks like Alfred Molina. Young Alfred Molina, not Spider-Man 2 Alfred Molina. the thing, like, you know, that I've said in the past with this Watt and Garrett stuff, remember how we've debated should he win player of the year, defensive player of the year, should he not? And we've gotten into these, like, very vitriolic battles between us and Cleveland, and Ken Carman will invade our show as Ken from Streetsboro and all that stuff. Think of, and I've said this, I remember I've said this, think of how the mighty have fallen. You're a Steelers fan, and what you're, like, reduced to caring about is whether or not your best defensive player wins the award over their best defensive player because they functionally play the same position. This feels like the same bit. Should TJ Watt get more than Miles? No! Quick answer, no! Because the Browns were stupid probably in the end to give him that money, even though I think he's aging a little more gracefully. They're basically the same player at this point in their careers. He's probably going to age a little more gracefully. He still gets double and triple teamed more than Watt does. I feel like the brute strength, which is more Garrett, and I think Watt's a speed guy more than anything else, and Garrett's got moves, Watt's got moves, so I'm not going to say one guy is a moves guy versus the other. I think Garrett's going to age very slightly more gracefully. Still a bad deal by them, I think. Still not a great move. I know they don't have a quarterback under contract anymore after Watson's gone for big money, but like, just because the Cleveland... Usually it was, oh, if the Cleveland Browns are doing it, go in the other direction. When they gave a fully guaranteed deal out to Deshaun Watson, the NFL got so pissed they told teams, don't do that. So why are we modeling... If you're the Steelers and Watt's argument is, I deserve more than that guy, I would treat the Browns giving Garrett what they gave him, the $40 million a year that Watt would now want a little bit more than. I'd treat that like an outlier and say, we're not keeping up with them. Why would we? They were always lagging in the back. You didn't even know they were in the team picture for the AFC North.
When it comes to the Browns, I thought they could have set themselves up pretty nicely for the future by trading Garrett. They had that second overall pick already, knowing that Cam Ward, a quarterback, was going to get taken first. They could have made it easy on themselves. They could have taken Abdul Carter right there. There's your Miles Garrett potential replacement, and they would have had a plethora of picks to deal with. When it comes to Watt, in this argument, people take such offense when you claim that Watt shouldn't get the money, or you try to argue that Watt isn't worth the money that the Browns gave Garrett. I can acknowledge that TJ Watt, given what both guys have done through their careers so far, they both got drafted in the same class, Watt has been the better player. He's, to me at least, he's better in pretty much every single statistical category when you stack the two guys up. I think that Watt has been the better NFL player than Miles Garrett to this point. The issue is you're not paying for what the guy has done. You should be paying for what is coming in the future. And another key fact to the matter is Garrett is like a year and a half, I think at least, younger than what Watt is. And yeah, that is a little bit important to me when one of those guys is almost 31 and the other guy is 29. And Garrett will probably age more gracefully than what Watt does. Watt is already more dinged up than Garrett is at, you know, anyway.
Just by virtue of being younger than Watt, he'll age more gracefully over the length and term of the contract. And like I said before, I think the EAS alert hit. And by the way, our boss Craig is listening to me hold up the EAS thing and he's watching it. Craig, please print me a very nice size 72 font thing, landscape style, so it's horizontal. I need a sheet of paper in here for the summertime months that says EAS alert on it so that I can hold that up in front of the camera. This highlighter is not going to cut it, so I'm going to request that of our boss right now on the air and see if he can come down here. He's a bald steroid user, Donnie. We established that. Anybody who's bald, according to City Limits, is a steroid user, apparently, because of the Barry Bonds rubric. But... as I was saying about Watt, just the last point I wanted to make really quick is this. If he had had this great success over the years and there was all these playoff victories, it might be a sentimental thing that you were going to give him X, Y, and Z amount of money, even if it was bad business, but you could understand the sentiment. As much as he is individually great and has been a great Steeler, there is no team success that you can directly connect him to that actually matters for this fan base. Talking a little TJ Watt to start today's show, because James Palmer of Bleacher Report, he's got an NFL kind of wrap-up show on YouTube where he does very high production values, Donnie. I was very impressed. Now, we have very high production values on our YouTube. You've got the ticker. You've got all the signage. You've got all the buttons, which I guess technically if somebody were to look, they could see, okay, this is where I follow the fan. Ours is very high quality, but he's got that side ticker. You know what I'm talking about? He said he thinks, or based on what he's hearing, Watt could absolutely get more than $40 million, more than Myles Garrett got. But again, I'll stress to you, it felt like that was coming from Watt's camp. I think you all know, if you listen to this show, how the sausage is made in the NFL scoops game. You tend to cozy up to agents and or front office personnel, and occasionally you'll toss out a little morsel that might make one side or another look good so that you can continue to get scoops. At least that's one way it works. I've heard some other less savory ways lately, Donnie, that that scoops game might work. Cash transactions, potentially. Me and you were made aware of some things that might be going on. Let's put it that way. I just want to reiterate, though, I think being in business where people are comparing you to the Cleveland Browns and saying, should so-and-so team do what the Browns do, is doing bad business. And the Steelers don't have a big quarterback salary on the books, and so you can make the argument, hey, they can give TJ Watt this extension. Like, this matters. Players will always tell you that when you see a player get rewarded for what they've done, even if what they're going to do is a little bit more murky, then they respond well to that. But, man, you could take some of the money if you just said, TJ, we're not going all the way there financially for you. We're not going to that number, and try to make the team better at other spots by signing other better players. Like, this idea that, oh, they don't have a quarterback contract and they're going to make sure TJ is taken care of, you don't have to do that. It doesn't have to be fait accompli. That would be my bottom line point that I would want to stress here. You do not have to just do this because, well, that's how we always do things. And do you really want to pissed off TJ Watt because Myles Garrett's getting more money than him and he doesn't feel loved? Not my problem. It is not my problem. I will give credit to, I think, the majority of people who listen to this show and to the people who participate actively in this show and to really people around town. Don, would you agree? It does not feel like, despite all that TJ Watt has done, it does not feel like he is getting the rubber stamp treatment from fans where they're like, oh yeah, absolutely. You got to make sure he's happy. You got to do it. Like, I don't think he's getting the cut the check, make sure he's ahead of Garrett. They'll defend him chapter and verse about he's a better player than Garrett, but people don't necessarily want him to be paid like he's better than Garrett, because I don't think people feel like Garrett's worth that money, worth what the Browns did, and therefore they don't feel that TJ just, well, he deserves it now. I've got to back my guy.
I think the final five games put a sour taste in everybody's mouth, because as bad as the team was overall, TJ Watt was about as bad. He went
milk carton.
He went what? Like
full
200 plus snaps without a statistic of any sort.
He had the Tony Snell game. Tony Snell, the famous NBA player who went like 28 minutes without recording an official stat in the game.
He had multiple Tony Snell games in big spots where they needed their best player defensively to step up. And it also, to me, does a little bit factor into the age and injury possibility with him now. 2021, I would have said, give this dude all the money in the world. And I know that came down to the midnight hour, and then he finally did have his defensive player of the year season. Whether or not he was robbed in another year or two of that, that's kind of irrelevant to the conversation here. But this time around, I just don't feel that same way, and I think other people are on board with that too.
If he put them on
a guy who's going to be 31 by like midway through the season, and he's had more injuries to his docket the last couple of years than you would like to see.
It's not even stuff that like necessarily keeps him out for whole games or for weeks at a time. It's stuff that just, it's a ding here, it's a ding there. It's like a car that if you were selling the car, you'd say it's in good to very good shape, but we can't say excellent. If he had even single-handedly kept them like very close in that Ravens game, that playoff game, which was never actually close, right? We all agree that was a game that briefly got to one score but never felt like a one-score game at any point, really, in terms of how it actually, the game flow. I think people might even feel a little different. Oh, yeah, he was bad the late stage of the season, but, man, he turned it on against their arch rivals. That didn't happen. Who was it? Roger Rosengarten just ate him up, basically. He just disappeared over there. Yeah, that's not good. That's not the right time to be asking for big money. Let me put it that way. Fan Hotline is presented by Sullivan Super Service, Pittsburgh's trusted plumbing and HVAC provider for over 50 years. That music means it is time for a little official hockey talk. And I honestly, this is usually a day on the hockey calendar that I would go, oh, yeah, so what? Who cares that the first round of the NHL draft is tonight? The Penguins won't have any picks. They never have any picks. They made two first-round picks between 2013 and 2019. They have two now, though, back-to-back, 11 and 12. And to talk a lot more about that is senior NHL writer for The Athletic, Mr. Sean Gentile. OSG, how are you, buddy?
Why did you make it sound like a couple minutes ago like I'd actually know about Finnish draft prospects and stuff?
I don't know. I was just hoping that you would.
I don't appreciate you setting me up like that. I don't know any of those guys.
All right.
Hello. Hello. Hi. Hello. Hello.
It's good to talk to you. Do you at least know, and can you give people the more educated than I can dossier on Kashawn Aitchison, who feels like a dude who profiles just as Brooks Orpik 2.0, which would make him a pretty popular guy in this city before he would slow down physically, I think, if they drafted him.
Yeah, one of our draft guys, I don't know if it was Pronman or Wheeler, one of them said that he had like standout competitiveness and grind and all that stuff, which is whatever. A lot of times that's used to mask complaints about skill level, I think. When you talk about grind, and
he's
compete,
very gritty.
Whatever.
He's got the will to win on defense. When you put him on the left side of that second pairing, the man displays the will to win.
Anytime I hear that, I'm like, can he actually skate though?
Are we Hawk sure? Harrelson parachutes in to tell you from the White Sox game that this man just knows winning.
Aitchison can skate. That's the good thing. Is like it sounds like even though he is a tough guy, you know, gritty competitor, blah, blah, blah. He's also got some skill and he's got a lot of physical ability. And he's definitely the player who, even before the Rangers sent pick number 12 over to them a couple of days ago, Aitchison's the guy that was, that they're most closely linked with. So we'll see. But yeah, it sounds like he's a completely viable pick to make in that spot for sure.
How much desire do you sense there is from the people you talk to on Dubas's part to use one of those two first rounders to actually move up and go get a more premium player?
I think it's there for sure. And it's an interesting spot for them to be in too, because 11 and 12 are like just below the first apron or the first tier of prospect, right? Like it would be better if they were in the ninth pick for sure. Because if you're in nine, you know that you can get one of the premium forwards, whether it's like Jake O'Brien or Porter Martone or these players, you know, who they're certainly interested in and would certainly make a lot more sense. And if you're in nine, you're kind of guaranteed to get one of them. When you're a little bit farther down, you're 11, you're 12, you got to hope that someone makes kind of an off the board decision. And then, you know, and obviously all it takes is one. We've seen plenty of times, including recently, where in the top 10 NHL teams get goofy. And then, you know, you see someone who you really like maybe slide down. So it's not out of the realm of possibility that those guys are there at 11 or 12. And it wouldn't take them moving all that far up either to have their pick of at least one of them. So yeah, it's an interesting spot to be in. I will say though, in the last hour or so, Montreal made a trade.
And then signed a guy to a big extension, did they not?
Yeah, signed him to a big extension for sure. But the end result there is now the New York Islanders have pick 15 and 16, which was their return in that deal. New York is definitely they have the number one pick. Mm-hmm. They're super interested in trading up too, because one of the top five or six forwards in the draft, a guy who at one point was kind of the consensus number one overall pick. That's before sort of a mediocre year at BC. His name's James Hagans. He's a Long Islander. Like, he's a local dude. So the thought is that the Islanders, as part of that return, are now going to try to package and move their way back up pretty solidly in the top 10 so they can take Hagans. So now there's two teams that are pretty clearly trying to move up if the situation dictates it.
Just right this second, obviously asking you to predict the future, and so no stakes if it doesn't go this way. Would you say the Penguins' first pick will be made at 11 or sooner than that in this draft?
I'll say they make the pick at 11. and then try to probably use the other first round pick to acquire an actual NHL player. If I had to guess, that's what it would be, but that they make one of those 11 and 12 picks, that they don't actually make two first round picks and use one of them to actually go and get, you know, a pre-existing, right, somewhat established, you know, young, you know, prospect that's 21, 22, 23.
Sean Gentile, senior NHL writer at The Athletic, is joining us right now. NHL draft is tonight. Penguins, shock of shocks, actually have not one but two first-round picks for Kyle Dubas to figure out what to do with. Given his draft history, does he have, like, a type, Dubas, as far as, like, the kind of player he likes to pick in the first round? Because we know that anything really back half of the first round becomes an automatic crapshoot, and then beyond, it's a total crapshoot, but with any pick in the first round, does he like a certain kind of player? Has he shown a certain tendency, Sean?
There was a stretch with the Leafs a few years ago where he was all in on undersized, smart, skillsy guys who maybe in different circumstances would have dropped because they were, you know, 5'10 instead of 6'1. That was his kind of go-to. Smart guys, skilled guys, not necessarily the biggest guys. And he was all in on those for a stretch with Toronto. It seems like he's moved away from that flat out. Like all the players that we've seen them linked to realistically, when you're talking about Porter Martone and Kayshon Acheson and the other defenseman, Jackson Green or whatever his name is. I just forgot.
Jackson Brown running on empty. Who cares?
Not Jackson. I keep wanting to say Jackson Brown. That's not it. He's not running on empty. Those dudes are big. They're tall. They're nasty. They're physical. It seems like he's like pivoted off, you know, the quote unquote Dubas type, which is again short, skilled, maybe with some connection to Sault Ste. Marie or whatever. And you know, so it seems like he's drawn from a little bit more of a diverse group right now. Porter Martone is the forward who they've been most closely linked to, and he's a big, nasty, skilled winger who could go anywhere from 4 to 9, let's say. So again, like we talked about before, it doesn't seem like going from 11 to 9 is that big of a jump, but in this case it is.
Is it safe to say then that the image that Kyle Dubas is trying to rebuild these Penguins in is more like Florida, tough, physical, nasty, physically larger players, basically, versus what the Penguins have kind of become, which is, I think your colleague Josh Yowie wrote, small and relatively easy to play against these last couple years?
I'd say so. I mean, like, Dubas is who he is, though. He's certainly not a guy who's going to just sell out and take someone because they're 6'5 and then let the chips fall where
they're. So he's not a Brian Burke. I'm looking for truculence in my players.
Exactly. He's not just going to take, you know, the tallest player available who's got a half decent blend of, you know, goals and penalty minutes. That's not how he operates. That's not the kind of stuff that he values. I think above all else, like he's looking for skill and he's looking for hockey ability. But now it's like the tiebreaker instead of before, when it was like, you know, value and skill and brains. Like all things being equal, he would absolutely rather have a guy who's taller and a little bit nastier and plays with more of an edge for sure.
Since you just mentioned that his previous quote type was the smaller but very skilled guys, what are the chances that the Penguins with something other than their first round pick might try to go after LJ Mooney, who would be a first rounder if he was 6 feet tall and not 5'8"?
If this were like 2 years ago, I would say you could pencil in LJ Mooney as like a second round draft pick, because that is the exact sort of guy that Dubas, just to a pretty decent amount of criticism, especially down the stretch there in Toronto, like that's the exact kind of guy that he would target, is a player who, what do we hear about LJ Mooney? If he were 6 feet tall or 6 foot one,
he's a top 10 pick, maybe. He's a
top 10 pick.
Yep. Trocheck saying things like he's way more skilled and talented than me, all that stuff.
Right. So in some regards, a guy like LJ Mooney is an undervalued asset. In years ago, we're saying 2020, 2021 is when it peaked for Kyle in Toronto with that. The obsession with finding undervalued assets and market inefficiencies and whatever, it kind of coalesced around drafting shorter players. And basically it didn't work. Like there was a draft class in Toronto that yes, there's some crummy luck involved, and it was a weird draft class because they were taking players who maybe they hadn't seen all that much because of the pandemic, but they went all in on short players and kind of came up snake eyes on it. So he's pivoted off of that a little bit, but I think the mindset remains the same. It's like trying to find undervalued assets and market inefficiencies and whatever else. And if the end result is that a dude like LJ Mooney slides to the third round or whatever, Pittsburgh has all these second, third round picks. I would be maybe not shocked if they didn't take him, but I think he absolutely would be a big time consideration because he fits some version of the kind of player that Dubas has looked for in the past.
Last one, Sean, and it has nothing to do with the draft. An 84 game schedule starting in 2026-27. My question is very simple. Who the F asked for this? The last thing I want is more NHL regular season games. Go the other direction. Give me like 66 in honor of Lemieux. I don't need this. I don't need two more NHL regular season games. And I know you agree with me.
The only good part about that is that they're coming at the cost of preseason games. What's worse than like January hockey? It's September hockey. So they're taking away a couple of those and giving it back. Yeah, I was looking at some of the notes on the CBA, which is, you know, all but a done deal at this point. That's as of today. It's a lot of.
Uh-oh. Whoa, what happened? Oh, no.